This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The church was at the center of Martin Luther King's life and of the civil rights movement. King was the co-pastor with his father at the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. The building that he preached in, now known as the Heritage Sanctuary, is undergoing renovations. The Ebenezer Baptist Church opened a new, larger building in 1999 called the Horizon Sanctuary. If you visit the older sanctuary, you may hear the history of the church told by its staff member, Shirley Barnhart. She's a lifelong member of Ebenezer Baptist Church and knew Martin Luther King when she was growing up. Her family had followed King's grandfather when he moved from rural Greensboro, Georgia, to Atlanta to preach at Ebenezer. King was 9 years older than Barnhart. She says she always knew he was special.
When I was like 5, 6 years old, I tell this story all the time. He was a teenager then, and he used to be here at the church with us whenever we were all here for whatever. It could be through the week, it could be on Sundays for whatever, and he would see us as children, like 5, 6 years old, and that's the first time I remember knowing him, because he used to pick me up along with the other little children here, throw us up in the air, catch us and put us down and hug on us. Every time, and we didn't call him Dr. King because he wasn't Dr. King at that time, and I still don't call him that unless I'm talking to people that didn't know him. His name was M.L., standing for Martin Luther. Now, he would do it every time, it seemed as though I would see him coming toward us, I would try to hide because a lot of times he didn't know that I would be dizzy when he put me down. And when I was like that age growing on up, it was something about him then, and I did not know what it was. I could not be myself around him. I was so painfully shy of him. Because he had this presence. Now, I couldn't have told you this years, when I was that young. But as I grew older and older, I knew something was very, very special about him. And then one time I had to sing a solo here in 62, 63. And Coretta heard about it. She said, sure. She called me up. She said, Shirley, what you going to sing? And I told her about this soprano, Lynn Thin Price, I had heard on the Ed Sullivan Show one Sunday evening, and I said, I would like to sing A City Called Heaven. I heard this opera singing it. So she said, okay, get the music and bring it up to the house, because we lived a couple of blocks from them at that time over here, and they call it now the historical area. But back in those days, it was just the neighborhood where you lived. Okay, I took the music up and never dreaming he was going to come home that morning from wherever he had been. And I was singing, rehearsing with Coretta, and all of a sudden he came in and he saw me. He had on this overcoat and hat. I never will forget. And he looked at me. He says, oh, we're going to have this great boy singing for us Sunday morning. Now, it went in one ear and out the other at that time. I didn't even think about what he had said. But, years and years later, I thought about it, and I have it on a recording because I had a concert here in 96. And I told that story about how that happened. I said, now, how many people can say Dr. King called their voice great? So I can.
So initially, you knew Martin Luther King as like a big brother.
Oh, yes.
But when he started preaching,
mm-hmm.
are there things that he said early on that really stuck in your mind?
I never will forget the sermon he preached. I was pregnant with my youngest child. I was sitting up in the balcony, and that was the year of 67, sort of toward the end of that year, probably in October of 67, because she was born in December. He was saying that Sunday, when that day comes, and these were his words, when that day comes, don't talk about all of my awards. Don't talk about my Nobel Peace Prize. Don't talk about where I went to school. But say on that day, I tried to feed the hungry. I tried to clothe the naked. I tried to help somebody. And that's what he was all about. And that sermon, those words have stayed with me all these years.
How did he affect your thinking about the civil rights movement? Were you ever an activist?
No. You know what? I get this question a lot. We weren't involved as members in a lot of that because Reverend King Sr. never encouraged us as members to get involved with all of that. First of all, he was afraid for his son. That was number one. And he didn't want him to do that. Now, this is public knowledge. Reverend King was so afraid that something was going to happen to him, and which it did years and years later. So whenever ML was away marching in jail and all that, we just waited for him to come back home. I never thought about getting out there, because, see, the marches weren't here in Atlanta. They were in Mississippi and Alabama and other places. We never had bad race relations here, so we didn't have any marches.
So did you not really strongly identify with the movement at the time?
No, because I was young, raising, having my children, and I just never thought about it, really.
Did you ever go to him for advice?
No, never did. I never did. When I was up to the house before he married Coretta, we would just, would be there with him. And I say this sometimes, in all of that time, I never saw him casual dressed. He was always with a suit and towel. But I was just so shy of him. You know, we all had crushes on him anyway, all the teenagers.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I was one of the main ones. I used to write him little notes, and when church was over, I would try to figure out how I was going to send him this note, give it to him. And one of the little girls was with me. She would say, "Shirley, when you shake his hand, just leave it in his hand."
Did you do that?
Yeah. And to this day, I don't know what I wrote on that note, on those notes, rather.
Did your children spend as much time in church as you did as a child?
Oh, not as much, because when they were coming along, they had more things to do than we did. But they were here from the moment they came into the world up until they came out of high school. So the second son that was dedicated by Dr. King at 3 months, he truly, truly loves his church, just about like me, because he is so much like me that, and now he's with the Count Basie's Orchestra.
Oh, what does he play?
He plays the trumpet.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, and he's, when Dr. King held him up that Sunday morning, now we didn't know he was going to be here to dedicate him. I thought Reverend King Sr. would do it, because he always would do it if ML wasn't here. But he was here that Sunday, and he held Scotty up. He said, "Scotty, you're going to be somebody great one day." And of all the things that he said to Scotty and my family, because we were right on the pulpit with him and Scotty, that particular statement never left me. I didn't dwell on it in the beginning, but years and years later, I thought about it, and I will say I believe that's why Scotty is where he is today, because if he were living, he would try to go to every one of their concerts. That's how he was about us, anybody here at this church.
How did you find out that Martin Luther King was assassinated?
I never will forget it. I was home looking at the news at 7 o'clock. It came on the 7 o'clock news. I will never, when I heard it, I went almost crazy. We all was screaming and hollering. I got in my car, and my mother, if she were living, she would to tell you. I gathered up as many church members as I could. I called them. And I went by and picked my mother up and a few other church members. And you talking about raining, I have never, ever seen it rain like that since in my life. I couldn't hardly see going out of the expressway to get to the parents' home. That's where we were headed, to the, not to his house, but to the parents' home. And when we got there, I never will forget seeing Richard Nixon, Sammy Davis Jr., a lot of the celebrities had come in that night. And it was on, now Coretta was at her house. And but I wanted to be with the parents because they were like my parents. And I never will forget when I was getting ready to leave to come home, I went upstairs to Reverend King Sr.'s bedroom to let him know we were leaving. And when I peeped in the door and opened the door a little bit, there stood Dr. Mays, who was the president of Morehouse College. He was a very close friend of Reverend King Sr., and other ministers were standing there. And I said, Reverend King, we're getting ready to leave. And you know what he said to me?
What did he say?
Shirley, do you have a way home?
See,
he was always concerned about his members having a way home at night from church. Isn't that something?
Martin Luther King seemed to have a premonition that he might be killed.
Yeah, he did.
Was that something that you, as a close friend of the family, had been aware of?
Not me per se, but I knew it sort of toward the end of his life, because of the things he was saying. You know, like the sermon he preached about. You know,
the one you mentioned when we when we were talking.
And then when he was down in Memphis for the march down there. But let me say this: right before he left, going to Memphis, he knew my baby girl was going to be dedicated by him, and he told Coretta to tell me that he couldn't wait to see her. Because when she was born, he was, you know, in and out, real busy. So he hadn't had a chance to see her, but he knew he was going to dedicate her that first Sunday in April. And he said, tell Shirley, I can't wait to see the baby, and, you know, I'll be back from Memphis. So he just knew he was coming back, but he didn't get back. So Reverend King Sr. had to dedicate her. So that's how I know how long he's been dead. From her age, she just turned 36 in December. So I have a card, a baby card that he and Coretta sent me when she was born. I still have that. I don't have the envelope. I don't know where that is, but I have the card.
Now, there's a new Ebenezer Baptist Church that
yes.
was built with, like, 2,000 seats. It's much bigger and more modern than the original church.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that's where, is that where all the services are held now?
Yes,
or just,
that's where we worship now. We don't worship over here anymore.
So you're speaking to us from the old church. Can you still pray in the old church, even though the services aren't there?
Yeah, I go up every day to pray and meditate when I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I start my day. And it's so, I can't describe how I feel when I walk in there. It's just, I just feel God's presence. That church is really anointed. And but I feel like one day, I may not be here to see it, but God going to have somebody there to preach on Sundays, to have a choir back in that choir stand, to worship, because that church was not built to be closed by anybody, for anybody. Dr. King would turn over in his grave if he knew that church was closed. His father, his grandfather, the first pastor. But I can't do anything about it other than pray and hope that one day God will let us worship back in it, because that's what it was built for.
Well, Shirley Barnhart, thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Shirley Barnhart is a lifelong member of the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta and is now on the staff.